Now, from the left coast to the D.C. Beltway, covering the topics you love to hate and hate to miss, it's the Silk or Joe Show.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the Silk or Joe Show. Alan Nathan, show host here with you all. Silk or Joe Show co-host Joe with you all here today. I really botched that. It just occurred to me at the last minute that I can actually say I'm Alan Nathan, show host Joe, but I can also say I'm Silk or Joe Show co-host Joe. There's a lot of hats that I wear these days, but if you want to see the products of all these hats, you can go to MainStreetRadioNetwork.com. You'll find out more about both shows, the Alan Nathan Show, which I host several times a week, and the Silk or Joe Show, which I host just on the weekends, all there at MainStreetRadioNetwork.com. You'll find podcasts for the shows, too, and you'll find the Android app for those of you who have Android phones, all there at MainStreetRadioNetwork.com. Then there's AlanNathan.com, where if you're curious about where the Alan Nathan Show came from, you can find out more about the late Alan Nathan on that website, as well as his articles, op-eds, columns that he's written during his lifetime, AlanNathan.com. And we want to thank the Salem Radio Network for distributing the show, which can be found on social media, Facebook at Main Street Radio Network, X at Main Street Radio, and X at Alan Nathan. Oh, shoot, I forgot to actually look up something for this show. I'm just seeing that now in my notes. Hey, dummy, look this up. Anyway, though. Continuing some fallout from the Carmelo Anthony trial. I don't know if I actually talked about it on the Silk or Joe Show last weekend or not. But there's this... that really kind of made my day, honestly. This black Howard University professor who insists that you must treat all black men like thugs who will kill you if you look at them the wrong way. And she says that behavior is morally correct, which, you know, every stereotype that I've heard from family members, family members, she just confirmed them, as well as between her and the Smithsonian back in 2020 with the help of black scholars, all these negative stereotypes were confirmed. And that some elderly relatives of mine had. And I got to say, I'm happily amused by this. You know, we're told, oh, it's racist, they're bigots, they're stereotyping. But then we're also told that all these stereotypes are true and you're a bigot if you have a problem with that. Anyway, who is this person in this case in point here? Well, this is Dr. Stacey Patton, who... she's a black female doctor professor at Howard University. So in the left-wing hierarchy, she is absolutely an authoritative source on this stuff. Not only that, but she's an award-winning journalist and an adoptee. That just adds another child abuse survivor too. These add victimhood points. And for those of you unaware, that makes you even more credible in the left-wing worldview, where if you can slap on a couple of victimhood points, then that just makes you, I mean, she could run for president at this point, honestly, and get all the votes just by virtue of everyone else being bigoted for running against her. She can absolutely declare that. So that is the nature of the beast as far as the left wing, how they define credibility, how they define ethos, if you will. One of the basic debating principles, logos, ethos, and pathos. Pathos, emotional appeal. Ethos, appeal to credibility. And logos, appeal to logic. So her ethos is through the roof with leftists because, you know, first of all, she's a doctor, a black female. That just automatically elevates her number one. We're told, believe all women, believe all black women in particular. Black women are the heart and soul of the Democrat Party. You know, everything good about them because they're the most oppressed type of woman, apparently, next to migrants now. Illegal immigrant women, I think, are escalating a little bit. Oh, and trans women probably trump black women. But she counters that by also being a doctor at a historically and a professor at a historically black university. So that elevates her standing. And then further, she's an adoptee. Well, that elevates it even more. She had such a tragic childhood. And then again, child abuse survivor. That really elevates her credibility. You have to listen to this woman. And she's an award-winning journalist, author, nationally recognized child advocate, and college professor. Her writings on race, higher education, culture, and politics, and child welfare issues have appeared in the New York Times, Washington Post, BBC News, Al Jazeera, and other outlets. She has appeared on MSNBC, CNN, ABC News, Democracy Now!, Fox News, and other outlets. So, through the roof. She is an authoritative source. Even if you don't adhere to the left's idea that just being a black female college professor who's a child abuse survivor makes her an authoritative support source, the rest of that might. So here she is, right after the verdict for Carmelo Anthony came in, she published a article on her little personal Substack page. And let's see, where's the title? Here it is. Dear Jeff Metcalf, that is the father of Austin Metcalf, the murder victim, your son is dead because you failed to teach him that black boys have boundaries. Whoa, man. And then she goes on to talk about how this man failed to basically tell his son, stay the hell away from black people. That's her argument, basically. Stay the heck away from them, bow to them. They are emotionally fragile. They are prone to violence, and it's all your fault. It's all your fault, because and it's entirely justified that they are so fragile and prone to violence, and it's all your fault. So, again, all these negative stereotypes coming from this authoritative source, too. Wow. It's incredible. Now, also, online researchers found that the article she published happened to most likely be mostly AI generated. I totally misread this. I have was likely mostly AI generated, and then I said most likely AI generated, which, you know, you just reverse two words, but that changed the whole meaning. No, it's like 70% of her article here was AI generated, which, wow, you got to this status, but you can't even, and you're so passionate, but you can't even write the damn article yourself if you're so passionate about it. And she's a class A race huckster. Anyway, though, they also, between this authoritative source and the Smithsonian in 2020 in collaboration with black scholars, you know, I really feel that I owe every white racist I've condemned an apology, since according to Leaning Black Minds, they were right. And further, their only racism was in thinking these attributes they stereotyped were negative. That's what we hear from the Smithsonian with the help of black scholars back in 2020. That's what we hear from Dr. Stacy Patton, professor at Howard University. These are the same anti-black tropes that were peddled by the KKK 100 years ago when they owned the Democrat Party. The only difference is that we are told these are positive aspects, and they are being promoted by the black community, being promoted by their leaders, their scholars, their experts. And furthermore, I got a review from Rate My Professors of this person. Dr. Patton's, quote, Dr. Patton's class focused on race and little else. She seemed to be more interested in indoctrination than teaching. If you go along, you get a good grade. You know, I should have probably gotten what class she has, because if it was math, that would have been hilarious, but it's probably some kind of history crap or whatever. Anyway, though, all they did was peddle, all they're doing now is peddle the same stereotypes, the same language about blacks being helpless, whether it's in impulse control or whether it's in society, you just can't do anything with and should just surrender to their natures and frame it as a good thing today instead of framing it as bad like 100 years ago. That's it. Repackaged, new label, same crap that led to the racism blacks actually did experience all that time ago, the racism that justified slavery. But blacks are basically modern slaves to their Democrat plantation owners, so it kind of makes sense. You don't think someone's getting rich off this misery? Look at the mansions that Black Lives Matter activists bought for themselves. Look at the wealth civil rights activists like Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson made for themselves. Look at this Dr. Stacy Patton with all her accolades and media appearances when all she can do is complain about racism and reaffirm stereotypes that we were told were wrong. If it weren't for exploiting racism by justifying these stereotypes and ensuring that conditions that keep blacks oppressed remain, such as generational welfare, perpetual victimhood mentality, then these race hustlers have secured a profit for themselves. So congratulations, Democrats. That is an achievement in diversity. You've got blacks basically enslaving other blacks, again, because that's where we bought slaves from. Other blacks. I misread this. I should have said, I should have done my enunciation different. Blacks saying enslaving other blacks again. That's how it should have been said. Anyway, though, so this is, just like I said, they're just repackaging the stereotypes because this is how they make money now. And I mean, they don't have these people out picking cotton or anything, mind you, but they don't have to. Just sitting in your home, you can generate a huge profit off an oppressed black man, whether it's siphoning off from the infrastructure used to get welfare and benefits to them, whether it's siphoning off of welfare, you know, from people who may have passed away in that community and now you're taking it in their name. Whether it's siphoning off welfare that perhaps these people should be getting, but they aren't because you're taking a cut of it for yourself, or whether it's you're a civil rights activist who's taking what little welfare they get and profiting off of it yourself, Or your Dr. Stacey Patton, who made her career, I guess, telling black people that they're oppressed and have no impulse control and should just be wild animals, and whites should be okay with that because it's racist to even criticize such things. Or whether you're those scholars at the Smithsonian who basically condemned anything that advances humanity as being white values that are incompatible with the black community. Or going back to the early 90s, Dr. Arlene Hieronymus, who I've mentioned before, she has this book out that says that blacks obtain genetic damage over the generations for having to live in white societies by white rules, and Democrats make policies based off of this nonsense. The Biden administration was using her work. Democrats at the state level were using her work as recently as the past 5 years. So for 30 years now, this kind of thinking has been oppressing the black community, but it's very profitable for the ones who are doing the oppressing. Very profitable. So, you know, while you get to sit at home and pocket a welfare check, it's still, in a way, kind of like slavery, but a little bit more comfortable. More Silk or Joshua after this break.
June is National Dairy Month, and the dairy aisle is offering more than many shoppers may realize. From time-tested staples to exciting new finds, here's culinary instructor and cookbook author Brooke Parkhurst with more.
The dairy aisle starts with the basics people already know well, like milk, egg, cheese, yogurt, and butter. They're affordable, versatile, and naturally rich in nutrients like protein and calcium. And they're already a regular part of how most families eat every week.
That's backed up by updated dietary guidance, which puts greater emphasis on protein and nutrient-dense foods, many of which have long lived in the dairy aisle. It's a win for households looking for everyday value without sacrificing nutrition.
Beyond the staples, there's a lot happening. Cottage cheese is having a real moment in new recipes. There are globally inspired dips, probiotic drinks like kefir, and plenty of snackable options that make quick meals and snacks easier at home and on the go.
For ideas and inspiration using items from the dairy aisle, visit easyhomemeals.com.
June is Internet Safety Month, an annual reminder to keep your personal information secure. Stay one step ahead of cyber risks and build healthy online habits. That's why TikTok is partnering with digital safety expert and parent, creator Kathy Pedrias, to launch a safety starter pack for families. The starter pack helps families have proactive conversations about teens' online experiences, making digital safety and security feel more approachable. Kathy Pedrias offers three simple tips to help families create a safer online experience.
First, run a security checkup to manage trusted devices, enable two-step verification, and review important account alerts. Second, use TikTok's family pairing feature to build on the many preset safety, privacy, and security settings already turned on for teens. And last, be curious about your teen's online experiences and use TikTok's Guardian's Guide to talk about creating positive digital boundaries together.
For more, visit TikTok.com/safety.
Building Safety Month, an awareness campaign by the International Code Council, highlights how codes implemented across the country and safety professionals keep us safe. This year's theme, Built to Last, starts with how you can get involved. ICC CEO John Belsick explains.
Building safety starts at home because that's where people spend most of their time. We often see that small issues like overloaded outlets, loose handrails, or blocked exits can turn into serious risks if they're not addressed.
Another focus this year, resilience, especially as natural disasters become more frequent.
Modern building codes are one of the most effective tools we have when it comes to disaster resilience. They're designed to reduce damage, protect the people inside, and help communities recover quicker from disasters like hurricanes and wildfires.
And accessibility is key.
Communities Without Limits means designing buildings and public spaces that are usable, intuitive, and welcoming for people of all ages and abilities.
To learn more, including how to reach out to local representatives to advocate for the latest codes, visit buildingsafetymonth.org.
Hey, what's up, everybody? I'm Jason Derulo. I love that music connects to people all over the country. But unfortunately, so does something else. Childhood hunger. 15 million kids struggle with hunger right here in America. And yet, every year, billions of pounds of surplus food in the U.S. go to waste instead of going to the children in need. Feeding America is working to change this. The Feeding America nationwide network of food banks rescues this surplus of food to help provide meals to families in virtually every community in the United States, including yours. But they just can't do this alone. Join me in the fight against hunger in America. For more information on what you can do to get involved, visit feedingamerica.org. That's feedingamerica.org. Together we can solve hunger. Together, we're feeding America. A message from Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Silk Road Joe Show, everybody. Co-host Joe with you all today. Always a blast to be with you all. So, Elon Musk last weekend, of course, I recorded the show early so I couldn't talk about it, but he became a trillionaire, the world's first trillionaire, although that's by modern standards. As far as inflation goes, I went back all the way to 1913 once, looking at the inflation statistics, and he wouldn't have been a trillionaire by those standards. But he would have been the richest man in the world in 1913 and in the 70s. He had, 10 times more money than J. Paul Getty did. Actually, no, he had 30 times more money. Adjusting for inflation, Elon Musk has today 30 times more money than J. Paul Getty did in the 70s. And the Rockefeller, and he has 10, 15 times more money than the Rockefellers did back in 1913, 1914. Again, adjusted for inflation. So, I'm glad, though. I checked right before this segment to see how SpaceX's stock is doing, and I'm glad to see it isn't taking the path that Newsmax took last year, where it just went straight down, bottomed out, and they did not recover. I feel very bad for those people. But joining us to talk about Elon Musk and SpaceX, we have Dr. Rainer Zittelman, an internationally sought-after guest speaker across four continents. Over the last few years, he has written articles and given interviews to many of the world's leading media, including The Daily Telegraph, Forbes, Le Monde, and Der Spiegel. He is author of New Space Capitalism, The Entrepreneurial Path to the Stars. Dr. Zittelman, always appreciate you being on. How are you today?
Thanks. I'm fine.
Well, glad to have you. Actually, I'm not sure if we've had you on this show. I know we've had you on the Alan Nathan show when I'm hosting. But anyway, what do you make of SpaceX's debut and how so far the stocks seem to be doing good?
Yes, they are doing good. But, I'm not so much interested what happens now in these days or next few months. But I'm interested in the long-term perspective of SpaceX. And my book is about, first, the history to understand how they became so successful, and then the perspectives for the futures, even for what could happen within the next 10 years.
Yeah, and especially if the SpaceX launch here is successful on the stock market, then that would definitely encourage other companies, hey, maybe we should try and get our acts together. Maybe this isn't just some billionaire's experiment. Maybe we can get a lot of profitability out of this.
Yes, even in the last years, most people did not recognize it, but there were some space companies that gained in the last 2 years about 1,000%. For example, Rocket Lab, it's a company from New Zealand, founded by Peter Beck, a New Zealander, and Planet Lab, that's a company based in San Francisco and Germany. So there are, of course, a lot of others, and there will be more others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you mentioned Rocket Lab Corporation. I'm just looking them up right now. And boy, they've been, this is the same group, they've been doing pretty good. They went from being worth $5 in 2024, and now they're up to $105 as of today. They peaked last month, I think. They peaked last month probably right around the time of, they peaked right around the time of SpaceX. Just 2 weeks before, they peaked at 140, and it seems that SpaceX might have tucked some wind out of their sails.
Yes, and this company is interesting because, as mentioned, it's founded by New Zealander Peter Beck, who even didn't study and who took a mortgage on his house to finance all this. And last year, he launched 21 rockets. Of course, it may sound not so much as SpaceX, who launched that launched 165, but compared with Europe, whole Europe launched 8 rockets last year, and this New Zealander 3 times more. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems almost like the age of organized governments space efforts is coming to an end, and now it's all being left to private entities to come up with the rockets for us.
Yes, absolutely. I give you only one number that most people don't know. Last year, we had 324 rocket launches worldwide, 324. But 165 out of them were SpaceX. So if SpaceX were a country, it would be number one, far ahead of China, with 88 launches. Or from 15,000 satellites in orbit, 10,000 are Starlink satellites. So it's definitely the beginning of what I call new space capitalism.
Hmm. And I can only see this as being a pro-growth path, because if you just leave it to a government, and we saw what happened with the Apollo missions, there wasn't really any profitability in sending anyone to the moon, so the government had much more things to focus its spending on, so we just cut the program. I mean, we could have had so much more in the way of space exploration, so much more advanced technology, but instead it's like, oh, well, yeah, it's not worth it. We're just going to stop. And then we haven't been back to the moon in over 50 years now. We just had this the Artemis mission earlier this year. That was really the first venture to the moon in, like I said, 50 years.
Exactly. And my book is, how did it happen? Because, of course, the moon landing was a great success. But for this, there worked 400,000 people, 400,000 employees, 20,000 companies. And today's dollars cost $300 billion. You cannot do it for a long time. And what happened after the moon landing, the wind was out of the sails, because it was a competition between the Soviet Union and the United States. And then after Apollo, the space shuttle program was a total economic disaster. Only one number again. They expected costs for every flight $10 million. In the end, it was, in reality, more than $1 billion, only to give you one number, to give you an idea that it was a total failure. And then they had these two accidents where 14 people died. And in 2011, I have a chapter in my book with a chapter titled The End of the Future. But at this moment, after Space Shuttle, the United States were not longer able to bring American astronauts from American soil with American rockets to the International Space Station. The United States relied on the Russians for the next 9 years with very old-fashioned Soyuz rockets. And, of course, they charged a lot of money because they had a monopoly. And this was the moment, because of the failure of this government-led program with the space shuttle, that some smart people in NASA said, okay, let's give it a try to these private companies. They called it their Hail Mary move. But, you know, Hail Mary, the football usually doesn't work. But this time it worked. And in 2020, there was the first, again, American rocket from American soil to bring American astronauts to the International Space Station. But this time it was private.
Yeah, I've been thinking that really it seems, as far as exploration goes, private groups, private industries have been much more efficient just through human history than the government. I mean, aside from Columbus's expedition to the New World, which had the backing of the Spanish crown, but that was mostly just for financing. It was really more of a private thing. And then, of course, you have the East India Company doing all sorts of explorations. It's a company. It's not its own. It's not part of the government. So it really, you know, it just seems like private interest. You know, maybe the government will give it tacit backing, kind of like the Artemis mission, perhaps, but maybe like with some government backing, but mostly left to civilian sector is the way to go.
Yeah, yes. And you see it now, for example, Elon Musk is able to build reusable rockets. He's the first. No government space agency is able to do it. Not NASA, not the Chinese, not the Russians, not the, of course, not the European. He's the only one. The only other one now was Jeff Bezos half a year ago, but Elon Musk did it 10 years ago, first time to build reusable rockets. And he reduced launch costs by 95%. Imagine, 95%.
All right, well, Dr. Zilman, I appreciate you being on the show to talk about all this. And again, listeners, his book is titled New Space Capitalism, The Entrepreneurial Path to the Stars. You can look that up during the break, but we got more Silk or Joe Show on the other side.
Thank you.
The most complete college student offer Microsoft has ever made available is here now. From April 15th through June 30th, verified college students can purchase select Windows 11 PCs and be eligible for the Microsoft College Offer. Mark Linton, Vice President at Microsoft, has more.
The Microsoft College Offer gives students who are new subscribers 12 months of Microsoft 365 Premium for productivity and schoolwork, 12 months of Xbox Game Pass Ultimate, where you access hundreds of games, and a free design your own Xbox wireless controller, where you can personalize your gaming setup with custom colors. And with Windows 11, students could choose from a wide range of amazing PCs that are eligible for the Microsoft College offer at great prices, colors, and specs, so they can find the right PC that fits them best.
Windows 11 PCs plus the Microsoft College offer is available to U.S. students with a valid .edu email. Terms apply. Learn more at windows.com/backtoschooloffer. That's windows.com/backtoschooloffer. As summer arrives and people head outside, doctors are preparing for what they call trauma season, a time when serious injuries and ER visits spike nationwide. May is National Stop the Bleed Month, a time when everyone should learn how to respond to a bleeding emergency. With more, here's Dr. David Scott Shapiro, chair of the American College of Surgeons Stop the Bleed Committee.
Uncontrolled bleeding is a leading cause of preventable death. Thousands of lives could be saved every year if bystanders learn to control that severe bleeding and are empowered to act immediately at the scene, even before EMS arrives.
The American College of Surgeons urges everyone to learn three simple steps: apply firm pressure, pack the wound, and use a tourniquet when needed.
A person with serious bleeding can bleed to death within minutes. These are practical skills anyone can learn and use in those first critical moments. The ACS Stop the Bleed course is made for everyone.
To find training and to get an ACS Stop the Bleed kit, visit stopthebleed.org/summer.
May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and did you know that feeding birds is good for your mental health? A 2024 study confirmed what millions of Americans are already discovering. Birding isn't just a hobby, it's a wellness habit. Just 30 minutes of bird watching has been shown to reduce stress more effectively than a standard walk outdoors. Wildlife advocate Adrian Chizis is the Director of Consumer and Bird Engagement at Global Harvest Foods.
That daily ritual of noticing, watching, and being present is one of the simplest and most accessible good day habits anyone can build this month. And it's remarkably easy. You could be a bird watcher by the end of the day. All you need is a feeder, a bag of quality seed, and a spot near a window where you can enjoy the view.
Quality seed like Cool Bird Specialty Blends or Audubon Park Snack Stacks make it easy and keep the birds coming back. Visit morecoolbirds.com or audubonpark.com for beginner-friendly tips, seed guidance, and ideas for attracting birds to your yard.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
What are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
Well, what are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. Don't you remember me? Don't you know that we miss you?
Miss me? Who misses me?
You know, all your friends in the forest. The trees, the pond, that little fort that you made out of branches. We all miss you.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
The forest is not that far away. Have an adventure today. I'm sure your mom would take you.
You're right. I should get out. I want to have fun. Play in puddles, catch frogs, and climb trees. Hey, Mom!
Yeah, hon?
Steven! What is that in your hand?
It's my sense of adventure, Mom. It's telling me we need to get out of the house and have some fun in nature today.
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Silk Road Joe Show. Co-host Joe with you all today. So, got some other stuff to talk about now on this show. I don't know, do I really want to get into the Iran deal? I did it on the Nathan show earlier this week. It's a memo of understanding, and it could easily be thrown out the window at any point. Either side can violate it. It's ostensibly a cause for a cessation of hostilities between but all parties involved, which would include Lebanon and in Lebanon with Israel and Hezbollah. So Hezbollah would also be obligated to stop its attacks. So actually, this could get thrown out the window if Hezbollah decides to launch an attack on Israel. There's just so many ways that this thing could get thrown out the window. I'm not saying it's a great deal. I'm just saying it's just, well, it is what it is, but it's not terrible. Well, it's crap, but it's somehow Obama's deal was worse. So this could have been worse, but it wasn't. And that's the most complimentary thing I can say about it. Let other people be complimentary to it, though. Newt Gingrich, he had a very positive framing, but basically said what Senator Mark Warner from Virginia said. This was the best deal we could get, and when the other options were surrender or fully invade Iran. So really, for pragmatic reasons, this was the best that we were going to get without some further commitment. And you have President Trump coming out and mentioning how our arms stockpiles are low, our oil reserves are low. How did it get to that point where Joe Biden's out there bragging about destroying America's oil industry at the same time that Trump's out there saying that we couldn't prosecute this war much longer because of how low our oil reserves were? And I think we've talked about this kind of in a way on the Silker Joshua and the Alan Nathan show before, how because of a lack of permitting reform, we just have issues even starting up oil wells to begin with. It takes years once you do start them to once you do approve them, it takes years to actually get one started. So, you know, even though Trump came into office last year, I mean, it might still be, even without the permitting reform, it's going to be years before we see any results from anything he did. And that's assuming the next Democratic administration doesn't just stop the whole thing from happening. So the damage that has been done, it took only a couple of years to do it. It's going to take longer to reverse it. And the energy independence that we enjoyed under the first Trump term, it's going to take a while to get that back. It's going to take many years. We'd need several Trump administrations in order to get that back. Maybe if Trump were to serve another two terms, you know, we'd be back to where we were after all the stuff that the Democrats have done to this country to keep us dependent on foreign oil, to keep us dependent on Iranian oil, and also to bleed our oil reserves. Because remember, Joe Biden kept releasing our oil reserves under his administration to try and artificially lower gas costs, and fact good that did him, even counting for inflation. You know, we're still, as the prices drop, we're still on par with some of the prices we experienced during the Biden administration. So the war with Iran put prices up to where it was because of Biden's incompetence and attempts to dismantle the oil industry. I guess Democrats effectively made it impossible for us to fight this war with Iran. And then further, look at all the weapons that they gave out to Ukraine from our stockpiles. It's no wonder that we have very little left, because they decided that we're going to put Ukraine over America. You know, I mean, I was at the beginning, at the outset of the war and going up through the Obama administration into the Trump administration, I was all for giving weapons to Ukraine, but I just kind of assumed that we'd keep enough for ourselves, you know? I didn't think that we'd give them everything. I didn't think we'd empty our warehouses, but it seems that we have, and also Israel got some of them too. So we've just been emptying our supplies to the point where now we couldn't really continue a fight with Iran. I mean, unlike at least we're in a better state than Europe, where, you know, we can send people over there. We, you know, they just have to use sticks, but Europeans couldn't even do that much. I mean, gee whiz, there was a Russian oil tanker, or there was a Russian ship that fired on British shipping to warn them to stay away from each other in the English Channel. And the British, they couldn't respond. They couldn't have done anything. You know, maybe that's their wake-up call to rebuild themselves into an actual first world power instead of the third world migrant hellhole that they've become. But I doubt that. They've probably sunk too far, and the elites are profiting too much off of their current standing. But anyway, so yeah, this Iran deal, there's only like 5 or 6 minutes left in the segment anyway. Well, I want to pivot topics nonetheless, because like I said, you covered that earlier in the week. There's something else I want to talk about. Speaking of Democrats, you know, the ones who decided to make it impossible for us to fight a war, the ones who tried to make America into a third world country like England. Well, now you have Senator Adam Schiff on behalf of Hollywood, according to Breitbart here, quote, circulated draft legislation that would create a 15% federal credit for labor costs, roughly equivalent to Canada's incentive, and that is for Hollywood to continue production. That's right. these same people who hate America, hate the United States, hate you, make all these films and TV shows about how terrible it is, how racist white people are, how woke we should all be, transitioning children, gay sex for kids, all that crap. These same wokesters who hate you for opposing their ideology and opposing them taking your kids from you, those same people want you to pay them to make this propaganda. 15% federal credit for labor costs on this sort of nonsense. In fact, the Motion Picture Association pushed for 20% with 5% bonuses for filming in disaster areas or in enterprise zone. And as Breitbart points out, due to the fires, all of Los Angeles County would qualify for the disaster area. So they get paid an extra 5% bonus just for filming in Hollywood, in California. Great. And this would stack on top of state incentives as well. So again, every taxpayer across the country would be paying for this, and there's also lots of Democrats are on board as well. In fact, you have Brian Jack, a Republican congressman from Atlanta. He would be willing to co-sponsor the bill in the House because, you know, Atlanta, Georgia, they do a lot of filming there as well. There's a big film industry tax incentives in Georgia. I mean, look at all those films and TV shows where you see after the end credits, bait in Georgia. You know, Georgia's in on this too. But again, these folks in Hollywood that hate you want you to pay for them to make stuff about hating you. Or as Breitbart puts it in their headline, Hollywood wants people it hates to pay for federal tax credits. Because it goes to you. And these are the same people, too, who say tax the rich. Well, they are the rich, aren't they? Why don't they just go to their billionaire and millionaire celebrities there? Why don't they take pay cuts so that they can have a more working-class lifestyle? Why don't they get mayors and city councils and do some reforms so that the cost of living is better? No, instead, they want you to pay for the disasters that they themselves created for themselves. And not only that, but they can't even make a damn good product anymore. They can't even make a good product. Well, once in a while they'll come up with something, but not as much as they used to, not enough to keep the film industry afloat, and that's been a big problem with them. They just cannot compete anymore, so like a good socialist, when capitalism fails because you have no good ideas, because you are worthless to the market, you instead demand government intervention. You instead demand everyone else pick up the slack for your loser self, and that's what Hollywood is doing. Again, the very people they hate, quote this article from Breitbart here, as they phrase it, even though Hollywood hates, denigrates, smears, insults, and dismisses half the country as ignorant, backwards, racist, this failing industry is so desperate for more corporate welfare that there's a serious push to give the hateful bigots in Hollywood a federal tax credit. And there is. A lot of Democrats are in favor of this because it's a way to launder money for them. Remember, these are the same Hollywood elites who, if they can do this, some of that money that they get will be going to the Democrat Party. These guys are hardcore Democrat donors, anti-conservative in the works. So this money would end up making its way back to Democrat pockets in one way or another. Maybe, of course, not all of it, but some of it, sure. And yeah, it is also a typical Hollywood tactic to make a movie that's just absolutely terrible and then write it off as a business expense, write it off as a loss, and get all the money back through taxes. So these guys just cheat the system, and you got to figure the politicians that support it are getting some of this money too. The unions over there, oh my gosh, the unions who are at risk of losing these jobs and stuff. Well, these unions, of course, take their dues from their members, their compulsory dues, and give them to Democrats as well. So if Hollywood were to collapse, Democrats would suffer nationwide. They'd lose a ton of money. Can't have that, can you? So they're voting for tax credits. You, Republican, you take some of your money and pay for this Democrat campaign through this complicated laundering scheme that involves Hollywood, that hates you. that doesn't sound palatable. That doesn't sound appetizing. And if Democrats were in charge, this is the sort of thing they would impose. And we got to look forward to that in 2026 when Democrats... Wait, it is 2026. We got to look forward to that in this election year, this midterms, because that's probably one of the first things that they're going to try to do. Because they need money. They need to restore their money. I mean, gee whiz, look at the lack of No Kings protests last weekend. Right after the Carmelo Anthony verdict, where we're told that it's the result of white supremacy that he was denied justice. You know, you'd think we'd have had riots like we did with the George Floyd stuff, but we didn't. Where were they? Where were the No Kings protests? It was Trump's birthday. Anyone remember last year when they had those protests across the country for Trump's birthday? Where were those? What happened to those? We had nothing. We had like one protest in front of the White House. That's it. So Democrats are desperate for money. This would give them some. This would be the injection that they need. And coming up right in a midterm year, we can see them perhaps at least in preparation for 2028, if it doesn't happen this year. If they get the House and the Senate, they will try for that because they need the money desperately. More Silk Road Show after this break.
Summer entertaining often means more time in the kitchen, from meal prep to serving guests, and many households are looking for products that can keep up. Here's Chef Jamie Gwen.
Whether you're hosting friends or just handling everyday messes around the home, paper towels get used constantly. Bravo is new and made from 75% curbside recycled paper and cardboard. Plus, it's the only high-performance, eco-friendly paper towel designed to handle tough jobs without sacrificing strength.
Bravo paper towels have a natural tan color. They're made without added dyes, fragrances, or elemental chlorines.
With Bravo, you're getting a towel that's highly absorbent and three times stronger when wet. So it's great for scrubbing and won't fall apart. It's durable enough to rinse and reuse, and the half-size sheets help you use only what you need. Plus, the cloth-like feel is soft on your hands.
Find Bravo towels at Target or Target.com.
Hey, y'all, I'm Kim Gravel. I'm an entrepreneur here at QVC.
And I'm John Batalise, one of the QVC hosts.
We are celebrating our 40th anniversary of QVC, and we're doing it on June 17th, also because we're number one shop on TikTok. I mean, can you believe that?
The leaders in live social selling.
Now on TikTok. So we're celebrating the 40 years that has passed and the 40 years beyond, reaching a new generation with great products.
And speaking of the products that you're going to see on that June 17th TikTok Super Brand Day, we have our Dyson that is unbelievable. It's a launch, so you don't want to miss that, with all the great bundles you need. But as far as bundles, we've got things like Philosophy, the beauty brands you're going to fall in love with, Doll 10, Love Who You Are,
The Bissell.
Cleans like
gotta
a dream.
Have it.
If you want to shop with us, go to our TikTok shop page, type in QVC, but you can also find us on QVC Plus, HSN Plus, on your streaming apps, or you type it into QVCplus.com. But we are so excited for 40 years.
Can't wait to see you there.
My name is Judy Teeter, and I'm the mother of three boys. My youngest, Joe, was a great kid. He loved sports, music, and his youth group. One day, Joe asked me to drive him to an after-school event, which was about a mile from our home. I was driving through a green light when a car in cross traffic ran a red light and drove right into the side of our car, killing Joe. The driver was talking on her phone, so she never even saw the red light. She was so absorbed in her phone call. Before the crash, I didn't realize just talking on a cell phone while driving was so dangerous. Now it's something I think about every day. According to the National Safety Council, about one in four car crashes involves a cell phone. Hands-free is no safer. When you're behind the wheel, put away your phone. For Joe and for the thousands of needless deaths every year, remember, there is no safe way to talk on a cell phone while driving. Find out more at nsc.org/callskill.
Take a look under your bed. Find stuff under there? What about jobs? No? Now try your basement. There's a pair of overalls that overall you're not so into anymore. A perfectly good laptop that hasn't sat in your lap in months. And even more stuff, but still no jobs? Well, you really have both. See, stuff is defined as household articles considered as a group. Sometimes this stuff is no longer needed. Wait, no longer needed? That can't be right. Because remember those jobs you were looking for? Those are really needed, and they're the stuff inside your stuff. Even inside that winter coat that moved with you to Phoenix. Our job is to unlock those jobs, and it starts when you donate your stuff to your local Goodwill. Here's how we do it. When you donate to Goodwill, we sell your stuff to provide job training for people right here in your community. So just by teaming up with Goodwill, you help create jobs. And isn't that worth parting with the leftover guitar from your 80s cover band? Goodwill. Donate stuff, create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America. Our vets need you.
I'm a quadriplegic. I'm definitely at risk with my diminished lung capacity.
I have MS. I'm in a wheelchair, and I can't leave the house because I have a compromised immune system.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me? Would I be able to survive something?
It's just heavy. You know, it's a heavy moment.
This is a war. This really is.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
I am so grateful for the PVA. They're making sure that we have all of the food and supplies that we need right now.
We all gotta help each other right now. We can't get through this by ourselves.
It's with profound gratitude that you're gonna be saving our lives. To find out how you can help, please go to helppva.org. That's helppva.org.
Welcome back to the Silker Joe Show, everybody. Co-host Joe with you all this weekend. Appreciate you all tuning in. And we are joined for this last segment of the show this Father's Day weekend by a father himself, Frank Miniter. Not a father as in Catholic priest, but father as in progeny. And he is a journalist, editor of theheroicgent.com, and New York Times bestselling author with his latest book, Being Cool Heroes for Boys. Frank Miniter, appreciate you being on the show. How are you today? Nope. Frank Miniter, do we have you?
Sure do.
Okay. How are you doing today?
Very good. Thanks for having me here.
Yep, glad to have you. So you have this book out, Cool Heroes for Boys, and the genesis of it, I understand, is that you were just, you know, trying to relate to your son, trying to find some sort of hero for him to read about, and found it was actually somewhat lacking. Tell us more about that.
Right. As I went to bookstores and the library with him, I was just appalled by the contemporary literature that I was finding for him. It's not written for boys anymore. It's written for girls, which is great. You know, more power to girls, but boys do need their heroes too, and they've been just destroyed for them, including out of their school textbooks, which I've taken a long look at. They've either banned them outright or they've watered them down to they're just kind of ridiculous and not, they don't really speak to boys and embolden them. Like, I asked my son who his heroes were, and I said, who are you learning about in history class? He's like, well, George Washington. Like, well, what do you know about him? So I started to tell him about the Battle of Bogotá, when George Washington, two horses shot out from under him in the French Indian War, and was the hero of the day and saved it. And he didn't know any of that stuff. And I said, well, who else? He said, well, Paul Revere rode this horse, I guess. I said, wait a second. No, Paul Revere, he was leaving to go and tell the people to protect their guns. The British were going to get their guns. Did he tell you that? And the teacher said, no, he just didn't tell me that. So I walked the Freedom Trail with him in Boston and saw that whole thing. And he didn't know that the British general, General Gage, actually seized all the arms of the people inside Boston in order to disarm them, to control them. How that led to, here we are at the 250th anniversary, the sign of the Declaration of Independence. Kids don't know this stuff about our own history. It all began over that very basic fundamental freedom. And so seeing those heroes for himself and walking in those steps, which I've went to many other places with him to do that, just started to show him and embolden him. And I call him this book's greatest editor, Cool Heroes for Boys' greatest editor, because of all the impact he gave to this story.
Yeah, it's impressive, and thank you for taking the time to write this story, you know, for all the other parents out there. You know, most would have been satisfied, oh, hey, and I got my kid interested, I'm done. But you decided to take it a step further and actually write a book for everyone.
Yeah, this is 20 Cool Heroes for Adventure. It goes to a lot of different people, and some of them really surprised me. Like, I didn't know the story of Perce Blackborough. Nobody knows who he was, but he actually stowed away on Ernest Shackleton's ship, The Endurance, which is probably the greatest survival story of all time. And he's found stowing away. Two days in, he's found. They're headed toward Antarctica. They're going to explore Antarctica. It's 1914. He's bought it in front of Ernest Shackleton. Shackleton's a famous Irishman. Just yells at him, don't you know we eat stowaways when we get hungry on this ship? And this kid, Perce Blackborough, 18 years old, goes, I think they would get more meat off you, sir. And right away, he became this. Ernest Shackleton started to like him, and he became one of the heroes of that whole journey. They all survived somehow, losing their ship, and going beneath the ice in the Antarctic, but they managed through a lot of misadventures to survive. But his story was part of that, and that's in this book, as one of those two tales for our kids to understand and grow up to. I think finding that adventure in a kid, when they find that adventure and the rite of passage that it entails for them, they can then grow themselves into becoming the hero of their story instead of the stuff that they're fed today, unfortunately, in our school system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and to that end, you have a piece out over at PJ Media. It just came out back on the 17th, How to Save Boys as Heroes from the Woke Mob, came out earlier this week. And you just kind of go into detail further about how some of these heroes they're going after, like George Washington, you know, it's not enough that they're not teaching much about him to begin with. You know, they're now tearing down statues of him.
Exactly. They're ripping them right out by the roots. In 2020, they literally did that. Christopher Columbus, George Washington, a lot of other heroes. And, you know, of course, none of those heroes are perfect. You know, we could say bad things about George Washington. He did own slaves and so on. None of these people are perfect, but they stood for a beautiful ideal and pushed themselves into something greater than themselves. And that should be heralded. None of us are perfect. So let's look at what's good in them and let's be honest about what was not so good in them. That gives the well-rounded perspective. I've done that for my son since he was just a little kid. I tell him the truth about what he doesn't understand it. I tell him the complete truth. And he looks at my face and he's like, am I getting the truth? And he can see that he is. And then he trusts me. And he grows up into it. And by stages, he understands it and learns more and more. So this is an incredibly honest book on people, not just from our history, but from across the world. The 47 Ronin are in it. That's just an incredible tale. Alan Turing, one of the code breakers of World War II, is in it. Many different people who can inspire this generation.
Yeah, it's certainly something needed. I mean, we have a mental health crisis among young men. Perhaps some of that can be attributed to just no role in society and no role models really to follow, because there's just been this overcorrection. You know, after the feminist movements and stuff, suddenly it became, well, let's, guys had their turn. Let's go about the girls. I mean, I remember Hillary Clinton's campaign slogan, it's her turn. Like, it just seems like everyone else gets thrown behind because we got to focus on this one group now. We can't focus on everybody. We have to focus on one group and, you know, highlight them, glow them up instead of adding to them. Yeah.
It's a total frontal attack on manliness and what they call the patriarchy. That strong male, here we are at Father's Day, that strong male who stands up for his family, beside his wife, they see as a threat because he'll go, wait a second, because this boy put on makeup, he's supposed to compete against my daughters in school sports? That's just ridiculous. Because you'd like to go after law-abiding gun owners instead of criminals, let the criminals out, let law-abiding gun owners get this happen under the Biden administration? That's just ridiculous. They stand up for what really matters, for the U.S. Bill of Rights, and stubbornly so. And that, to them, to the left, is a threat. That insistence on the rule of law becomes a threat. So they'd rather have the nuclear family broken apart, which is literally what they say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they can frame, and if they can rewrite, remove heroes from history, rewrite history to suit their narratives, then anything done historically in the past by someone else that they say is problematic, like the Bill of Rights, like the Constitution, well, they can say, well, clearly this person who wrote it is bad, this person who wrote it is bad, therefore the whole thing is bad, therefore we need to throw it out and we need to be the ones to do it because we are the current moral arbiters of everything that's good.
100% right. Yeah, that's why we need to step in with the truth and reorient our kids and let them know where our heroes really are, what we really stood for, what they can actually do in their own lives. I think that's what each one of these stories put together gives them, is that inspiration to say, wait a second, I can build on these things, even though they're from different cultures, different parts of the world, some of Mars, some from other places. They're all showing me this way to go forward to become who I really want to become.
Mm-hmm. Well, where can those listeners, we got less than a minute left, where can the listeners get a copy of Cool Heroes for Boys?
Oh, it's at Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble. You can find it at Walmart. It's really wherever books are sold.
All right. Well, Frank Minotaur, appreciate you being on the show. And again, listeners, he's also editor of theheroicgent.com if you want to check that out. But the book is titled Cool Heroes for Boys, and you can find it where he just said. And we are done with you all for this hour of the Silker Joe Show. Appreciate you all tuning in. Of course, our website is mainstreetradionetwork.com. Be seeing you.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-978-0600 or at our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com.